It's Sunday, which means it's time for Viewpoint Presents with Malcolm and Michael Johns. Each week, we bring you the top global and national news stories presented with facts and top-tier analysis, all from a perspective rooted in America's founding principles. Join us in defending our great nation and American liberty. Now, here's Malcolm and Michael with the week's top stories.
Well, my message today is we are on our own, my fellow Americans, as there appears to be no accountability coming from the media, Marxist Express, in holding Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, accountable for their extreme proposed policies and where they want to take America, number one. And they're non-answers and they're half-baked ideas that will all spell doom for the Republic, for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, right? You know, that Pledge of Allegiance there in 1923, the words, the flag of the United States of America were actually added at the time, and it read, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. You didn't know you're getting a history lesson today. And one more point to that, in 1954, the response to the communist threats against our great nation, President Eisenhower encouraged Congress to add the words, under God. And that now created the 31-word pledge we say as it reads, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now, the question I have for all of you, did you just stand and put the hand on your heart, right? Welcome to Viewpoint Presents. It is Malcolm here along with Michael Johns. And, you know, I start there, Michael, because we're going to talk about messaging and the presidential race right up front. And, you know, even when you think about our Pledge of Allegiance, actually, it was all about messaging to our great nation. I know that might be an interesting or tricky place to start for some, but it's not for me, because we honed in on our message back, as I say, in 1923 to 1954, to get it right, to say this is important. These are our values here. Messaging is really important. And the problem is we don't have a media right now reporting any truth or knowledge of any kind, Michael. I think that's the biggest, gravest threat to this election in 2020, is it not?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, we're dealing with a mass media, mainstream media that basically has assumed the role of a communications vehicle of the Democrat Party. I mean, there, as you correctly said at the open, there's been literally no difficult questioning presented to Biden. He's not being held accountable for any of his purported policies or his claimed ability to resolve any of these issues. You and I have addressed some of the issues on the pandemic management. I mean, I see nothing literally, even in the written plan. And when you consider that this is a campaign that has all of these resources, really could turn to anyone for, you know, for instructive ideas on how to get through the rest of this. There's nothing in there that the administration has not already essentially been pursuing. And on the travel ban, which he opposed, I found it intriguing last night just going through it. There's still no references to travel bans in there. I assume they're implied, but why do we have to assume that? I think you need to hear that. And we're not having those questions posed. Nothing in the economic agenda that suggests he's going to spark the economy is the opposite. Why would you put $4 trillion of new taxes back on the American people in a pandemic like this? And I think the final issue is on the repeal of the Trump tax cuts, which 82% of middle-class Americans benefited from those. If you're going to repeal it, how do you say you're not going to raise taxes on the middle class?
Well, that's exactly the catch point right there, Michael. They're avoiding that. They're not talking about those tax cuts specifically, although they have said they're going to repeal them, as you say. But then they come out with their other thing and said only over 400,000, which is a total ruse. I mean, the whole thing makes no sense because obviously, and many economics experts have looked at this, economists, and they've said all across the board, Michael, this is a tax hike across the board for all of Americans. And quite frankly, at any time, it's a bad deal. media, let alone, as you suggest, in a pandemic. But nobody, you know, this whole adage, Michael, about where's the money better? Is it better in your wallet or in your pocketbook, or is it better to give it to a runaway government? I mean, think about it. On those terms alone, people should know enough to vote for a president such as Donald Trump, who really puts the people first.
Yeah, we're in an economy right now where liquidity and, you know, access to money right now is a major issue. It's one of the reasons the president supported the relief package he did, that actually, you know, issued checks directly to people. One other way to do that, of course, is by tax relief, which is why I think this payroll tax suspension is a fantastic idea that the president has, that presumably also will be repealed by Biden and Harris if you give them the opportunity. I think just across the board, back into the Iran agreement, back into the Paris Accord, no real seriousness in holding China accountable. We've got foreign adversaries pretty much openly rooting for Biden and Harris's victory, and a 47-year track record of this guy that really, like, literally no one can highlight one significant accomplishment that he has had. He is an empty vessel on which the far left is going to project and write their very radical agenda upon. And I'm not sure about his durability for even serving a four-year term. I mean, all the focus has been on the president, who's coming out of his viral bout, and looks like he'll be back on the campaign trail in Florida tomorrow. But we're in an issue where this guy's capability just is very much in question. And I don't see the appeal of his candidacy. It's still not reflecting, as we've talked about, in the enthusiasm gap, 20-point gap still there, with people inclined to vote for Trump much more enthusiastic than those who say they'll vote for Biden and may or may not do that.
It is really important to point out at this point, if you look, as we say now, Michael, at their policies as a whole, and you just mentioned again the Iran deal, the Paris Accord, all of these kinds of things, these big world globalist, one world sort of globalist agreements that became so commonplace in the 25 years before Trump. I mean, that we were on a globalist move, an earthquake, really. But if you look at their policies per se, of all the things they want to do from the Green Deal and all of these things across the board, these agreements, we're talking mega money. I mean, the cost and the financial burden to our nation. I mean, this issue alone, even if you don't consider any other issue, this issue alone will tell you it's not sustainable, it's not affordable, it's not doable. And so when you say all of the cost over here, put that over on one side a moment, okay? And then you take a look at this whole race of where they're talking about all this double, triple talk about taxes. I mean, anybody would have to come to the same conclusion. How are they going to raise all the money to do all this stuff? Because clearly they are bankrupt in our nation. It's already in bankrupt mode. This will push it so far over the edge and the cliff, we won't be able to come back anytime soon. This is serious. So what we're saying is we are exposing what you and I are talking about right now, exposes this thing for the farce that it is. They don't have a shot in hell of doing what they're talking about doing, Michael.
Well, no, I think, and what's concerning is, you know, you discussed the two ledgers, which clearly exist. It's like, here's what the cost is going to be the American people. That runs into the trillions of dollars.
Big time.
And if the other side of the ledger was, here are the trillions of dollars in benefit that you in turn are going to receive from it, I probably would still have concerns about it because of the implied level of trust and you're placing in a federal government and a federal bureaucracy. But that's not even there. The other side of the ledger is basically blank. What is the typical American family going to receive from going back into the Paris Agreement, spending all of this money basically in a redistribution scheme for what even its strongest advocates believe will be very, very minor incremental shifts in carbon emissions around the world, with the biggest polluter in the world being essentially exempt, meaning their restrictions on carbon emissions not even adjusted from where they are right now. They would make no compromise. No wonder they're so far behind it. We're very much, I mean, I know you and I talk a lot about China, but I don't think we talk too much about China, because I believe 3 or 5 years from now, we're going to be saying, why weren't more people talking about it back in 2020? We are basically facing two different visions, not just of our country, but of the world, really. Of, one vision, and I think we're embracing of that of individual rights and autonomy of countries. People can call that populism, but populism, and, reflects in the ability of the people to have a government that puts them first. And we have another vision, and it's reflected in the Communist Party of China. It's kind of reflected in Russia. And I think it's been reflected in the Clinton, Obama, Biden, Harris vision of the world, which essentially seeks to diminish our stature and make us just another country among countries, put into all of these global schemes, most of which are going to impose financial burdens on working Americans for really no return on investment.
No benefit at all. No. I love it when you say the ROI. There's no ROI here at all. That is actually a good way to say all this, my friends, is the ROI. What is the ROI? There is no ROI. And as Michael says, even if there was another part of this balance sheet equation that they're throwing at the American people, we'd at least look at, there's nothing to look at here. It is a total farce what they're projecting. Now, the bigger problem in all this, Michael, is the messaging. And staying on that narrative a moment, because there's some interesting things. All the things you and I are talking about right now, and these are really key, major, important issues, are not being reported or talked about in any sort of media circles. They're simply omitted. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and the Democrat Marxist policies that they embrace are clearly not in front. They're getting a pass. They're clearly not answering for this this double, triple speak here they're providing. It's all sort of twisted the way it's coming across. I'll give you an example here. You know, what worries me the most and what should worry all of you listening right now is that I'm telling you, almost all the headlines, and I want you to speak about this a moment, Michael, and here this is important. If you look at it, this worries me right now. Here's what worries me. All of the polls right now, all of the headlines and momentum of the media, when we talk about messaging, and the president, just having gone through this whole COVID episode and everything that's happened in the White House, has been a complete distraction at the worst possible time. Everybody would agree with that, I am certain. With that said, all of this here that's pushing forward, the media has this drumbeat of news, because what they're doing is they want you to believe a certain thing. I'm telling you, they want you to believe, and I know this is factual. They want you to believe that, oh my God, the president's so far down. Oh my God, there's no way he'll come back. Oh my God, I'll give you an example. Right in the Los Angeles Times yesterday, here's another one for you. Listen to this, Michael. This is to scare the hell out of people. This is the headline in the LA Times. As Trump's reelection prospects seem to sink, Republicans start distancing themselves and bid to keep control of the Senate. Now, this is in their warped minds and views. I just had earlier in the program Bill Hagerty on, who will be the next senator from Tennessee, in fact. And everybody knows that's all rubbish. What they want you to do is they put these headlines and these motions out there, Michael, for people to think that somehow you're going to believe that's true. And this, to me, is the real problem out here, and why it's so vital we get this message out there across America, my friend.
Yeah, the reality is just the opposite of that LA Times message, because, right. I mean, my phone rings almost every day from congressional candidates who would love to have the president out in their district right now campaigning for them. It's just the opposite. They can't get close enough to Trump. And I understand that completely, as we've discussed. I mean, this president has really redefined our party in a way that at least finally makes it relatable, that every day working men and women see in Trump a man who reflects their vision and their values and their policy aspirations. And I think they see in Biden, and one of the reasons we talked about the Hunter Biden story is it's not just the fact that it suggests the corruption of that ticket, but it's kind of a mindset, isn't it? I mean, that you're in it to see what you can personally derive from it, as opposed to being in it for the purposes of bettering the country, defending the country. And this is one of the great deteriorations, I think, in the Democrat Party of the last few decades, which has been really an increased failure to put people first. It really doesn't have a vision for how to create jobs. It's kind of acknowledged, I think, the fact that it's not going to embrace market mechanisms, but simultaneously it's not prepared to really define how this vast expansion of federal government is going to be beneficial to the American people. And they're not aided by the fact that there's no historical precedent they can point to. In fact, most of the historical precedents you would point to are pretty terrifying, because ultimately when you empower government to do certain things, you can do it by statute, but you know, ultimately it also requires compliance, and compliance can only occur through force. And that's ultimately proven why socialism and communism have proven so utterly devastating to human life, 100 million taken since 1917 by it. And I do think like we've at least reached the point where we're talking objectively about the fact that this path that they're proposing goes down a very ominous, terrifying road. It's not one that usually ends well. And kudos to anyone out there who's pointing that out, because this is not an alternative between two people offering just kind of little minor differences in the direction of this country. This redefines completely who and what we are. And I don't see any single category or demographic of this country it's going to end up better off with Biden and Harris.
Yeah, and again, the drip of these headlines are, like I said, a twist. I've got a couple of more I want to bounce at you. And I just want people to really understand the message. And the point we want to get across here up front of the program is how badly the messaging is off and how people are relating to the messaging. This is going to be the center point of this campaign, Michael. If people believe these headlines, we're in a heap of trouble. And I just don't know how else to say that right now to all of you.
Well,
here.
Here's the good news. The good news is that in 16, we finally reached a precipice, I think, where the American people pretty holistically understood that we have a mainstream media rooting for the other side. They started mm-hmm. to tune it out. They started to be disbelieving of it. The credibility of the media is like literally lower than Congress's. It's one of the lowest of any industry or profession. And it's given rise to an entire new industry of conservative or non-liberal media outlets that are blossoming. And so it's not really a positive thing. I'm not trying to describe it like that's the way. I mean, I wish media were objective. Yeah. But the only thing that has changed is, 20 years ago, media was also biased to the left, but the people were consuming it and believing it. They've become vastly more disbelieving, but I think that's also contributed to the divide in the country. And it's allowed each side to kind of dig in more adamantly. I mean, you really don't even hear anyone credibly talking about bipartisan solutions anymore. That suggests such a complete disengagement from the political reality that exists in how Congress and the executive branch actually interact.
Yeah, I mean, the words don't even come up. There is no more of that. That's long gone. That's pretty clear here. But just to show you again how bad the information is that's being flowed out there, listen to this headline, Michael, from Politico. It says, Republicans are finally dissing Donald Trump as the president's grip on the party loosens amid a coronavirus backlash and fears of an electoral landslide. Now, this is the narrative. Now, they want people to believe that that's accurate. And they're asking people to believe all of these headlines so that, well, then maybe you give up and you don't go to the polls, or like all their polls that come out. And then people will say, well, I guess I'm not going to vote because he's losing anyways, though my vote's not really going to matter. Right. And that is a danger sometimes in elections. You know, people don't realize that, but people think it's the opposite sure that happens. Yeah, they think it's the opposite. Like, well, if they say that, that means we all got to get out and vote really bad. But that doesn't have, if the numbers are like, you CNN, for instance, they announced, I put it out on social media the other day, they had like a 16-point spread in one of their polls. I mean, Mike, get the hell out of here, 16 points. What the hell are they smoking over there? Come on.
It's one of the reasons why you'll never see any campaign spokesperson or any candidate sort of come out and say, hey, look, we're losing. The message from all sides, literally through election day, is we're winning. I mean, now, if you want my objective assessment of this race, I think these polls, there's every good reason to believe they're as off as they were in 16. They're overcounting Democrats. Their selectivity of even Republicans is off. It's heavily weighted towards suburban as opposed to rural Republicans. They're not capturing the demographic. Now, whether that's a manifestation of the bias that already exists within these institutions or whether they just don't get it, I don't know. I know we're still seeing the same voices that were totally wrong in 2016 put before the American people as objective experts on the direction of this race. And you know, what's going to be the outcome? It's ultimately, it's a lot of this is really turnout. You know, I mean, these 63 million that voted for Trump, every good reason that they're still essentially there. There's not really been any erosion in that 63 million. I believe he's picked up many millions more. And, you know, when you see this gap in the enthusiasm and the fact that voter enthusiasm among youth is really like, a low in the century, they're not coming out. The Sanders base is kind of alienated. There's a frantic sort of effort to keep them in line. He's not, and Biden's just, he's just not an inspiring candidate. I think it's going to be very difficult for them to transfer these people who answer a phone call into people who actually get in their car, drive to the, you know, the, and cast a vote on November 3. I think it's going to be a very sizable number who don't do it. And there's also a huge gap in, you know, the lesser of two evils measurement of very sizable percent of individuals polled are looking at Biden as lesser of two evils, again, meaning there's not really support for him as a candidate. It's that they've probably got some issue with Trump's maybe communication style or personality. It probably may and likely doesn't have much to do with his actual policies, but 31% of Biden voters say they view him as a lesser of two evils.
Well, it is a facade. I'm going to call this whole election a bit of a facade. And let me make a point here with y'all here. So, instance, there's an opinion piece from. Let me give you the headline of this opinion piece first before I tell you who says it here. It's in the Wall Street Journal, and it's this. And this is the headline: If Joe Biden wins big, part of the reason will simply be that he is normal and people miss normal so much. And who writes that? Well, guess what? Peggy Noonan writes that headline, that message there. Now, all right, this point of being normal. You know, what's happened over many, many years is Americans seen our country becoming more of a globalist nation. They've seen the power base moving out of Washington, D.C., and it's moved abroad. And we've seen that shift happening now throughout multiple administrations, which I talk to you all about there all the time. But that shift is real. Now, on top of everything that had taken place through probably one of the worst presidents, certainly in the top, if you took your hand of five fingers and you had five losing presidents, that would be like the worst. Certainly Barack Obama would be in that top group without a doubt. And there are others that would, I mean, plenty of others, but to drive this point here. So if, you know, you're coming through those 8 years as well, on top of everything that had happened in the 25 years before that, and this globalist shift, what was gone in our nation. And then I have to tell you, in 2015, America looked at themselves and they said, oh my golly, where are we? What do we got left of this thing here? You know, our nation we're talking about is sinking faster than we can shake a stick at. And I think at that point, Michael, I think people internalized and said, you know what? I don't want to give it to another, establishment political figure who would be a president for the props of the Democrat regime or the Republican regime, these political party operatives. I'm going to give it to somebody different, which is really was the whole refreshing thing about our country, that you could do that, actually be a citizen and run for president. That was the vision. Trump throws his hat in the ring. The American people get excited. And you talk about an enthusiasm gap. I want to tell you right now, can anybody in their right mind tell me right now? Just clear your mind a minute and just let me close your eyes and then let me explain it this way. So you're at a Biden-Harris rally right now. You got your eyes closed, right? Okay. You got your eyes closed. You're at a Biden-Harris rally, some big arena rally that they're having. Now, do you visualize?
Do they have this?
Exactly. Do you? Well, if they did have it, brother, do you see them there like super excited? Now, just hear me a minute. Do you see people there like with the flags in their hands in America and patriotism, Michael? And man, people are juiced. And this is, oh man, this is the guy we want to win. Oh, and if he does it, God, we love that VP. She's like, wow. Like, all right, I want some of that. Now, does anybody visualize that in your mind? Now, open your eyes again. Okay, now. Now close your eyes again. And actually, this one, you don't have to close your eyes. You can leave them open because this is the real world. I'll explain to you now. Imagine that same arena. President Trump walks in. The place goes ballistic crazy. Can you visualize people with the flags and the enthusiasm and the patriots and all of that? I mean, can anybody see that? Oh, yeah, you can see that. Why? Because that's not a dream. It's not a nightmare. It's not a fairy tale. That's happening, Michael. Do you want to talk about an enthusiasm gap? My friend, I just gave you an enthusiasm gap in your brains. Figure it out.
Yeah, well, and one of the reasons is, you know, you listen to the Biden-Harris messaging, which, you know, you've mostly been projected from Biden's basement with media outlets that they select, obscure podcasts no one hears and things like that, that ask probably pre-approved questions. And, you know, these big issues are not being presented to him, nor is he capturing the moment of trying to seize on the aspirations of the American people. You're not hearing any commitments from them as far as jobs that he'll create or GDP numbers that they're going to hit or any of the metrics that you would measure a candidate's success by. What you're hearing him say is this guy in the White House has mismanaged something. And there's not even any specificity in that. He's wrong, of course. There really has not been. I think the management of this pandemic has been laudable in extraordinary ways. And that's just very difficult when you're losing lives for the American people to get their arms around. But there's nothing suggestive here that there has been any significant mishandling of the biggest crises mm-hmm. confronting. That's Both right. of these are manifestations mm-hmm. of China's aggression. And their willingness to allow this to blossom around the world and affect economies and affect the politics of, mm-hmm. of countries. It's only a question of the magnitude mm-hmm. and whether that was a pre-planned initiative or whether it was essentially one of just allowing it to blossom once it mm-hmm. escaped. And then the street riots, well, let's face it. I mean, if Trump could snap his fingers and end that, he would. This was a product also of Joe Biden's Democrat mayors who allowed this to go on and have seen some sort of political benefit in it. What I think we all have to hope is that this silent majority who have looked on yeah. both at the pandemic are going to see the hands of communist China behind it, are yeah. going to be more trusting of Trump to hold them accountable than Biden, who doesn't even describe them as anything to worry about, and that they're going to be more trusting of Trump to ultimately enforce the rule of law and order in the country than Biden, who I think is going to be pressured by the same radical left to have this entire People's Charter put in place as their agenda. They're not going to be quiet until those radicalized agenda items are checked off and done.
Yeah, there is that fight within that party. Well, Michael, this is the message we're just giving to people right now is so important. I can't stress this enough. And Michael, what you just say right there is entirely valuable, which you and I've been preaching this right along that, you know, again, these two points of principle in the room, which is the COVID and the civil unrest, are all products. One is of China, one is of the far left. The far left has also embraced the one from China. Why do you ask? Because the far left is in bed with China. Joe Biden has been in bed with China right along. He has a history of this. Joe Biden's family has been in China. They all profit from China. So when you look at these two major issues of the election, the only thing they could attack and attract to, we'll take a pause here. What we'll do next is Michael moments ago just talked about the People's Charter. You need to know more about this People's Charter, by the way, but even beyond that, this is the biggest couple of issues coming up next you're going to hear. In fact, make sure you turn the volume up and bring the family in to listen to what we'll tell you next, because this is a big deal. The People's Charter thing, but also what they're trying to do with the courts here, and they're trying to pack these courts. What does that really mean? Well, it means people, they are changing the United States for good, for permanently. You'll never have the Republic back again if they get their mitts on this thing. We need to pull their greedy, dirty, slimy hands off the program here. That's the best I can say it. You stay right there. More Viewpoint just after this pause.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
As we say, let the silent voices be heard. Shadow banning, editing, censorship, blocking, and adherence to political correctness are seen as serious threats to our God-given right to free speech. Suppressing free speech, the very cornerstone of our society, is not in the best interest of our listeners, readers, and those who provide our content. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
Now listen, what we're trying to do here is do some heavy lifting because we realize the time is short. We realize the clock is ticking and we understand the urgency of the message. You out there can feel the urgency as well. Michael, I did a program here, which, by the way, I mentioned earlier, is going to play on Monday on the talk radio, on the Voice of a Nation, which, you know, you know, it's my weekly show and you're on there often.
A great
with me
show.
As well. Thank you, brother. You're going to be on this week. I haven't told you yet, but you're going to be on this week. So I'll tell listeners now, because we got to ramp things up with the election coming fast. We got a lot of work to do. But this, I did a show that I want people to hear. Michael, and I'm not kidding you. I'm not fussing this thing. In analyzing all of this and understanding all the big issues of the day, certainly that Gallup puts out there, and that everybody understands healthcare, education, the economy being tops, are all vitally important for quality of life. But Michael, these next two issues we're going to talk about are major issues. We'll talk about the People's Charter in a moment, but the PAC and the Supreme Court, this will change business and politics as we know it. And there are no two bigger issues that people need to vote on than these next two issues. Why are they so important? Let's tell people.
Well, for one thing, the Supreme Court of the United States has become a much more routine and engaged body of government in hearing issues that over the last few decades have steadily eroded many of the Bill of Rights and a lot of the Constitution as we know it. There's been very aggressive challenges from the left. We have an increasing number of executive orders that are being issued by the president, which, you know, that's true under Obama. It's been true under Trump, too, as a product of this partisan divide, which means those things are being challenged in courts. And so you can have a body of an electorate that says, for instance, in 2016, we want to see a president who is more serious about, say, border security. And, you know, those issues end up federal court, Supreme Court, and you know, the political desires of the American people are not filled. Additionally, we have, I don't know if you want to call it a loophole, but the Constitution and our founders, much like today, they were geniuses, okay? We're not facing many geniuses in public life today, in my view, but like today, there were a lot of spirited debates over things, and there was a great degree of difference over setting up a federal judiciary, a lot of the founders felt it should have been done more on a state-based level. Mm-hmm. And there has been a fluctuation in the high, in the number of justices on the high court, but it hasn't been changed. It's been nine since the 1860s.
150 years.
Yeah, so 150 years of stability, mm-hmm. of basically, I guess, a handshake mm-hmm. agreement between the parties, much like there's been on Senate voting procedures, that this is the way democracy would function. And yet there is nothing that really constrains a president and Congress from adding additional members to that if they have the votes essentially to do it. In essence, in those first 2 years of the Trump administration, he could hypothetically have done it and didn't do it. No Republicans done it. I think, and you see in Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's unwillingness to answer this question, I think he said, you know, wait to the election and you'll find out. Let me just decode that political talk. That means basically he's going to do it, because I think if he were inclined to keep it the way it is, that would appeal to centrists, the individuals he's looking to grab right now. And his unwillingness to acknowledge that he would keep the Supreme Court at nine members, I think, is an indication that he would substantially change it. I mean, this we have within the Democrat Party, and it's kind of apparatchiks, these individuals who want to move the country toward a one-party rule. That sounds like it's inconceivable, but it's not in their eyes inconceivable. They feel that they've been close to achieving it. They've created complete monopolies of political power in most of the major cities of our country. And they've appealed and sold their messaging really through a series of misguided and ill-conceived policies that have not served the constituencies that they've appealed to.
Yeah,
which is the problem with all these promises now, too, is that you put all of the authority for American healthcare, for instance, in the hands of the federal government. The discussions are always going to be about how to contain costs. We're never going to talk about innovation. We're never going to talk about quality. We're never going to talk about quick access to care. Right. So if I hand you an insurance card and you're in the middle of the woods somewhere, and you can't get to a provider, how valuable is that insurance ultimately? You know, or if you have complicated issues that require the attention of specialists and you're not able to see a specialist, you're being forced into seeing a primary care physician with limited knowledge of it. It's not only not valuable, it's actually dangerous, which is why when you look at the elites in socialist countries in the world, when they've had serious life-threatening conditions, where have they gone? The United States. Mm-hmm. Including some of the most vocal voices in Canada for their nationalized healthcare have gone right down to, you know, the Mayo Clinic or Johns Hopkins for their care.
What the Democrat Party is really saying to me is they're saying when we don't get our own way, when it doesn't go the way we like or want it to, we're going to change the rules as they did back with the justices when they changed the rules and you don't need no longer needed a supermajority to approve one of these judges. You know, when that was a big deal, which is why the Republicans have been so successful now, Michael, with getting the Supreme Court, which is really the root cause of this whole problem. By the way, okay. I mean, it is.
Yeah, and look at I mentioned vaguely the Senate procedure, Malcolm. But yeah. I mean, look, think about the filibuster rule.
That's right.
I mean,
there
were hundreds of bills that were unable to get to Trump because of the filibuster, and they couldn't get the votes that are required. You move that number back down to 51, and give these guys control of both bodies and the White House, and there's almost no limitation on. How radicalized this legislation can get. And I'll tell you, I think they do have the instinct to do it. Obama, in fact, has been out talking about it, and others have been.
Well, it's another sign of things to come, obviously, like what we're talking about here with packing the court and why this is so important. I'm afraid that I don't know what the number is, but I'm guessing probably 30-40% of people out there are not even sure what we mean by packing the court. Probably more than that are really not.
Because we need a new phrase.
It's not exactly. It's not a common
blowing
term.
It up, I don't know.
Well, it's not a common term. Well, what they're really doing is making it into a political body. They're taking away the Supreme Court and they're making it that they're taking that other body of government and they're making it political. That's really all they're doing. And then it becomes just political appointees and it changes everything. I mean, the change in this would be incredible because remember, the Supreme Court is the final rule of the land. When they vote on something, that's it. That is like the Supreme Court. That's equivalent, Michael, in another country to the king ruling. You understand? The king has ruled. The Supreme Court has ruled. That's the law of the land. That's a kind of an interesting way to say it, but it's true.
And the functionality of that's absolutely true. The functionality of the body is not to be a political body.
That's right.
The functionality of the body, both under the Constitution, prior Supreme Court rulings. I mean, part of Marlboro Madison was rooted in all of this, was to define the functional role of the court, which is to interpret whether laws and acts of government are consistent or inconsistent with the words of the Constitution. They are not to be viewed as some sort of political vision for what's right or what's wrong or what might be good or not good. That is the role of Congress and the President of the United States.
And let me add to that, please.
And that's the threat that we confront, obviously, is that these courts have become so incredibly politicized.
This was the brilliance of the framer. This is the brilliance of the United States of America, Michael, we're talking about. You understand? This is the brilliance of it. It is what separates us, what differentiates this great country. This is one of the pivotal points to that end, Michael, with the fact of this, what the courts and the ability of what we're speaking about, that it's not politicized and that it's not a king and it's not somebody who has a dictatorial powers, Michael. You know what I'm saying? They don't have those kind of powers. Yeah. I mean, that's the brilliance of the three levers of government and the three branches of government, your judicial branch over here, your executive branch over here, and your congressional branch, your legislative branch over here. It was absolutely brilliant stroke of genius from our framers. You couldn't have made this up if you tried to even. It's that brilliant, really. And I point that out, Michael, because what they're trying to do right now is undo what our framers did. That's how important this is. And so when we say we need another phrase for that, we really kind of do, because packing the court doesn't mean it is serious. Maybe it doesn't sound as serious as what we're talking about here. But what they're really talking about is undoing the framers' vision and our Constitution. They're talking about undoing all that and making this a political body. Now, let me tell you something else here, what's happened in the last couple of days that is major to the point we're talking about here. This is, I would be underselling this if I said this was a fringe idea. This is a lunatic's idea. And this has been tried before, as I discussed in recent days here, with FDR back in 1937, because there were people in the high court that didn't like this New Deal. It was unconstitutional. Right now, when you talk about things like Obamacare and a lot of the regulations and environmental programs, it's also unconstitutional, many of these things, not to mention the farce of Roe Wade, which is very edgy and a very hostile conversation in our country. So Biden's asked on Thursday, Michael, he's asked, we already know this, but let me get to a point here. He's asked about this and in the craziest way, he's asked about the flag packing the court in this way. And he says, well, it's a legitimate question. Well, let me tell you why I'm not going to answer that question. Because it will shift all the focus. You'll all know my position on court packing the day after the election. Now he says that, but let me tell you one other point here, please. He says that, and then the media backs right off. So the media is just, they listen to whatever he says, and he said, and this is how, like when you say, well, how much is he in their court? My fellow Americans, I mean, listen to me. They really are just the spokes megaphone for whatever the hell Biden wants, because on Friday he comes out, he's in Las Vegas, and a reporter for the KTNV network there, that network, he comes out and he asks about packing, and listen to this exchange. This will just kill you here. So and I quote here, "This is the number one thing I've been asked about from viewers in the past couple of days," Biden says, after he's questioned by the reporter. Okay. "What's the number one thing I've been asked for in the last couple of days?" Okay, great. Then he goes on to say, "Well, the reporter says, well, you've been asked by the viewers who are probably, Biden says, as he says, well, you've been asked by the viewers who are probably Republicans who don't want me continuing to talk about what they're doing to the court right now, he responded. Well, sir, don't the voters deserve to know, the reporter asked. That's a reasonable question, Michael. Biden comes back and says, listen to this, brace yourself. The reporter again, well, sir, don't the voters deserve to know? Drum roll, please. No, they don't, he said. Joe Biden, the presidential candidate, says, let me say that again out loud for you. No, they don't. I'm not going to play his game. He'd love me to talk about it, and I've already said nothing on court packing. He'd love that to be discussion instead of what he's doing now. He makes no sense when he talks, number one. But can you believe this is what's happening, Michael, and that Biden, we talk about messaging up front. I mean, it's beyond him getting a pass right now. I mean, he's so far up their backside, they are. They're doing whatever the hell Biden wants, and he's just getting a pass here. This is crazy.
Well, and allowing him to be able to continue to speak in these vague ways and just sort of a very, you know, there's a level of arrogance there that the American people absolutely need to absorb and reject. Okay, because it doesn't get to be, you don't get to play it that way. You know, these are legitimate answers. These are legitimate questions when you're talking about, you know, process, procedure, and constraints on the executive branch of government. Your answer isn't you'll find out after you elect me. This is becoming dangerously reminiscent of Nancy Pelosi's pass it and you'll find out what's in it promise, right? Elect me and you'll find out what you're going to get. I'll just repeat what I said, though. I think, you know, to break down political speak, if you were inclined to maintain the status quo in the Supreme Court, you say that. That's your answer, and that's a pretty politically compelling one to offer. The reason you say is, no, I don't, you know, whatever position I take, it'll become the main issue, things like that, is because that is your plan. And I think Harris, who's, you know, kind of comes from the judicial branch in a way, has got a very, you know, kind of strong focus on that, is absolutely devoted to that. And now you have other major members in this party that are committed to do it. Essentially, if you let me break it all down. If you hand Biden and Harris the White House and the Senate, where, you know, there's a slim Republican majority right now, there's essentially no constraint on government power at that point if they execute on expanding the Supreme Court and getting rid of the filibuster rule. Now, all of a sudden, our system, which is designed to make sure that the excesses of political power are constrained within the Constitution's parameters, are gone, because you've got a politicized Supreme Court. Everything that's ruled on, even in these federal appellate courts, gets appealed to the Supreme Court, where decisions will be made based on politics, not on the rule of law. And you have a Senate where a simple majority is going to get anything passed. These have been constraining issues for Trump. And, you know, we utilized them pretty significantly to constrain Obama. I think the American people need to be acutely aware how dangerous such power would be. It would not be so dangerous if we didn't have candidates on the Democrat side who was so dedicated toward altering political power within the country. But like I said, this idea of bipartisanship is gone. They don't seek to work with the Republican Party. They seek to destroy the Republican Party. That's been the agenda that they've utilized in 4 years. And that's the strategy that's been embraced as one that is both realistic and politically sellable. I think American people need to send a message very, very loudly that is a no-go in their eyes.
Yeah. You always nail the points, man. I got to tell you, I was watching some videos of you this past week, the past few days, and you've been a force out there for so long, Michael. I just want to mention that. I think everybody knows that, but kudos to you. You're on it all the time, and here you are again. Listen, next time we have the time we have left here, let's talk about this People's Charter a moment. This is also important. I want to get your perspective on this. So if you don't know this out there, the Working Families Party, which is in partner with a whole about 8 or 9 people in Congress, people you recognize as extreme far lunacy politics, like the AOCs and the Ilhan Omar and Presley, and you know the people. It's bump a bump a bump a bump a bump. It's the same cast of characters, you know. But it's more widespread now, as well as these other groups and organizations. Well, they're working with the Working Families Party. You can look it up later on and see what I mean. It's a very it's a Marxist party. It's a minor party. Their national director, Morris Mitchell, who they're all working together here now. He came out and he said this, Michael, and I quote here. We've always said that electing Joe Biden was a doorway, not a destination. Well, I about fell on the floor when I read all of this. I mean, right. You're talking about putting it out that's there in the helpful. Middle of the day.
No, that's useful. I hope voters read that over and over again.
I know. Well, Michael, I mean,
fact,
there it is.
We should get some bumper stickers because really that is what we've been trying to convince the American people of that fact throughout this campaign. Yeah. We're now weeks away, and here you've got every far left, essentially major figure and institution, including those behind the street riots, come forward and say, this is going to be the agenda that is going to be pursued if you hand this guy the presidency.
Yeah.
You know, and you go down these items and it's a wish list. It's, you know, universal health care. Their jobs program, by the way, just remind me of the complete shovel ready promise. It's going to be a big government leading to no jobs. Defunding the police, absolutely in there. So Biden cannot be allowed to say, you know, that he's sort of defending these issues. He's already showing indications of caving to that kind of pressure. And then an incredible magnitude of nationalization of industry, including all of the energy sector. Energy jobs gone and energy costs to consumers skyrocketing. Can you imagine putting all of that power into the hands of the federal government to determine what forms of energy are utilized, how much each individual is ultimately allowed to consume, what the costs of that energy should be or shouldn't be? That's what you do. And that's what you do when you hand them healthcare too. Yeah. They decide what procedures and policies will be acceptable, what ones will not, where we will be investing in health research, where we won't. It becomes utterly politicized. And that's been the story of every major expansion of federal governmental authority. Is it's always sold with the best of intentions. It never delivers, and it's ultimately only winners are developing political constituencies. You can go back all the way to Social Security, which was rolled out, and there was a lot of concern at the time. If you go back and look at that debate, which is worth doing, with some of the skeptics saying, yeah, but you guys are going to ultimately tax this as income, but make sure you're not going to tax it as income. Oh, no, absolutely not. We will never tax Social Security's income. Well, sure enough, you know, after a period of time, the debate gets forgotten. Power is fully in their hands to change those rules, and they begin taxing Social Security benefits. It's the same issue here. You hand them all that authority. They're going to look for ways to cut costs, to cut corners, to favor one political constituency over another. And it is, at the end of the day, back to our Supreme Court decision, utterly unconstitutional. There is absolutely nothing within our Constitution that affords our federal government to be controlling whole industries of this country. In the case of healthcare, over 20%, almost 20% of our entire GDP. And energy on top of that, you now have government controlling over a third of the country's private sector.
This People's Charter is a globalist dream wish list come true to take over the United States of America. It is about as extreme and removed from our Constitution. It is about as extreme and removed from President Donald Trump, and it's extreme and removed from you out there that are listening right now. this is a in daylight takeover of our nation here. And one of the ways you can know that is if you look at all the groups that have surrounded this now that are part of this movement, with all of them, even Rohana, the Representative Rohana out of California, the Democrat, all these extreme socialist people, Rashida Tlaib, AOC, Presley, I mentioned, Omar, Black Lives Matter leaders, all these union type groups. Well, they're all part of this thing, and they're part of the plan that you were just talking about moments ago, beyond even a Green New Deal, which we simply cannot afford, even if we had wanted to, because it bankrupts every aspect of us. But you're talking about how could anybody afford their whole list of their party and what they're about? As you say, Michael, free public health care, universal child care, millions of green jobs, canceling student debt, 15 minimum wage, get rid of the police departments, throw the investments in communities. Yeah.
You know what you get? Wow. You got it. And this is the this is the challenge of selling, I guess, a conservative message. But every one of those things that they promise, they'll ultimately offer less of. You know, I mean, when you really drill down to it, as I just said, the nationalization of healthcare is going to mean less over time, less and less and less healthcare, less and less access. That's the story. Yeah. You defund the police, you're going to create chaos in these cities. Mm-hmm. The demand for some sort of law enforcement, ultimately beyond even what exists right now. They're acutely aware of that and seeing it political opportunity. And then the final point, which we didn't even mention, but did come up in the great interview, which I highly recommend that you did with one of our brightest minds in the conservative movement, Dinesh D'Souza, last week, was this perpetuity of of the $600 a week to the American people, which basically starts to create a disincentive for work at all. And as he described in his interview with you, and you guys had a good discussion on that topic, I thought. That it starts to be some sort of a compact, you know, basically you hand us your political loyalty and we'll give you, you know, this in financial reward. But the history indicates that those pacts get broken pretty quickly. We ultimately have to grow the economy. That's ultimately whatever your standing is, you know, even if you're not working, that's what funds our ability to have a safety net in this country. That's what supports our existing Medicaid program, which is fully available for individuals that are, with no income for health care. I really think, unfortunately, if you were going to choose which side of the argument is easier to argue, it's much easier to argue this people's charter. But think about this for a second. Those people that you just rattled off behind this comprise less than 5% of the electorate. Mm-hmm. And they're presenting this in a sellable way because they're working operationally in a very collaborative manner. And they're all together and all on the same page.
And we are right out of time here, but what a program. Michael, we nailed it here. This hour was fantastic. Play this back again, my fellow Americans. If you are hearing this on talk radio, it'll be on podcast Sunday afternoons as well. Play it back and listen to the entire program again here. This is the most important thing. And the topics and subjects that Michael and I have talked about are key. Listen, we need your help. I need your help to get this message out there. I plead with you. It's vitally important here. We need everybody to push forward here. It's like when we're all in a canoe or, you know, our oars in the water. We got to kind of do this together, people, if we're going to make this happen. And that's what Michael and I talk about all the time as a conservative movement. But more than that, my fellow Americans, it's an American movement. Look at it more that way. Let's invite our independents, moderates, and those left of center who really are looking to renew and restore and revitalize the American dream and all that it is. Listen, we'll be here all week long, 6 p.m. I'll see you on the Voice of a Nation. Michael will be on with me too during the week. We'll talk a lot more about a lot of these issues. That's, again, all pushed forward. Thank you again, my fellow Americans, for being on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud.